Celebrate the completion of your book and let Written Word Publishing help share it with the world. Take advantage of our professional, proficient, affordable, reliable editing, ghostwriting, and publishing services. Or you can purchase books and custom apparel. Visit writtenwordpublishing.com or call 720-390-5179 for more information. That's writtenwordpublishing.com or 720-390-5179.
Greetings, it's Dr. Burnett, publishing pusher, the all-embodied place of encouragement, cultural empowerment. Weekly, she'll engage conversations with entrepreneurs and creatives. And these insightful interviews are designed to help us build our businesses, respective brands, ourselves, and to hopefully propel us to that next level of greatness. Big Boss. So with no time to waste time, it's officially go time.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Annette, it is another fabulous day that I am above ground, thanking the Lord for this day and the opportunity to come before you and have a little dialogue with this beautiful young lady today, Nicolette Hemingway. How are you today, Nicolette?
I'm doing great, Dr. Annette. How are you?
Wonderful. Now, I want to tell you right now, we do not have any prepared questions, kind of going to go with the flow. And you're going to find out a whole lot about Nicolette today because she is a woman who has worn several different hats, as many have. And I think it's really great when we get to see the person now and then get to hear about where they started and we like to say the milestones on their journey. So we're going to be talking to Nicolette today. And Nicolette, as I begin, I love for people to know, like, where are you from? Where were you born? Where were you raised? How were you raised? Tell us.
Sure. I was born in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I am an Air Force brat. My grandfather and father also retired from the Air Force. I retired from another branch of service most people haven't heard of, which is called the U.S. Public Health Service. So being an Air Force brat, I've lived in several states, even overseas, in the Philippines. So I'm very familiar with the military life. My mother, and I met another lady probably about 3 or 4 years ago. My mother was the only person I knew that had an ID card her whole life because she was an Air Force brat. And then she married an airman. So she has never been without an ID card. And I said, I met a lady a few years ago. I was like, what? She was an Army brat. And then she retired from the Army. So I was like, okay, two ladies I know. So life, different things, you know, moving from base to base and having to learn new people, having to be the new kid in the class and being a shy person, that wasn't very easy for me. But in terms of academics, that's where I was able to make friends because I knew how to do this. Oh, I could read at this level. So people would ask me to help them. So that's what got me to come out of my shell a little bit.
You know, my husband is retired military. So I've been a part of the military community since my early 20s. So 40-ish years. And I know the great blessings that we receive being a part of the military community. Yes. I know sometimes people say, oh, I did it. I was like, well, it did us wonderful. We thoroughly enjoyed it. And my husband is retired and enjoying his retirement for quite a while now. Now, Nicolette, tell us about this branch that you said we never heard of because I hadn't heard of it.
Right. Some know it as the Commissioned Corps of the U.S. Public Health Service. How I explain it, where most people can understand, is the U.S. Surgeon General was our boss. We were all commissioned officers. We had the same rank as the Navy, some of the same uniforms, just our insignia was different. And again, we were pretty much all public health professionals. Like, there are doctors, dentists, nurses. I'm a health administrator by trade. And we worked in federal agencies. So my first duty station was with HRSA, also known as Health Resources and Services Administration. And my last duty station was with FDA, Food and Drug Administration. So a lot of us were assigned to federal agencies, even some friends who were like nurses or doctors or dentists were also assigned to Bureau of Prisons, because that's federal, and also Indian Health Service. So we were pretty much the public health branch of the military, if you look at it like that.
Okay. I hadn't even thought about that being military, but yeah, now that you break it down, that does make sense. All part of the government too. That's a blessing. Now, let me ask you, in that capacity, what drew you to that?
What drew me to it was the ability to serve my country, but I didn't have to go through all that crazy boot camp, like, you know, my dad and other family members, because we have siblings in every branch but the Marines. So that's what enticed me. I could still do public health, but I could do it at a higher level because I had worked for the city, the county, and even the state within the health department arena. So that's where I was at. I actually was living in Phoenix when we had a public health advisor assigned to our office. And he started telling me about this public health service. I looked at him like he had five heads. And I was like, well, where can I sign up? And so that was how I got into it. And I was able to see everything because being at the federal level, you're the ones who design the policies, who craft the policies, and then it gets filtered down to the state level, you know, the county level, in some cases, the city level. So it was good to see how it all came together. As being at the state level and the county level, I saw the end result, like, okay, you gave us so much money to do such and such program. But being behind the scenes, you really got to see how policies were made, how they, you know, appropriated funds, you know, what areas, because pretty much we dealt with underserved areas. So what underserved areas were going to get much needed, you know, healthcare access, healthcare services.
Oh, that's impressive. Wow. That sounds very interesting work. I thought I was going to be a lawyer at some point, and then I decided at the last minute against it. Because I must say, I said, no, I think I'm too honest to be a lawyer. But anyway, there are other kind of lawyers that you can be. You know? But I had dealt with so many that was so shady. I was like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, this is not the field for me.
So that's what I thought, of course, later, then I realized, oh, but you could have done some other things. But it, you know what I always say, we can always think about what we didn't do.
Yes.
But if we look at what we have done, it's still great in itself and got us to the point that we are at, in that particular season.
Yes, you're so right, because I never would have thought I would have been in the military, because I was like, the military life is not for me. I don't want to be moving every few years. And no, but the branch I was in, that wasn't the case, because you could spend your whole career in headquarters, which was in the Rockville, Maryland area. Mm-hmm. So that was a plus. And, you know, of course, I got my benefits back because I was like, I got to get my ID card back. You know, that was the thing, you know, shopping privileges, what? Oh, sign me up. Yes.
Yes, I still love my ID card, my military retiree ID card too. So now you, how many years did you work before you retired?
My public health career spanned, probably about 20 years, but I did 10 years in the military and I was able to retire. So I've been in public health for quite some time. I just recently switched gears when I became a business owner. So that's been like 3 years now. So I've, you know, pivoted, put public health to the side, and now focusing more on being with careers, dealing with career coaching, career development, resume writing, that type of thing now.
Okay, so you transitioned from public health administration, and now you're doing something on a different arena. Is it really on a different arena, or are you seeing how you are able to integrate things that you, experiences that you gained and knowledge, expertise into what you are doing now?
Yes, but it really is a total pivot, because public health, I was looking more at programs. I did a lot of policy. I did, programs, underserved areas like, community health centers, rural health clinics, that type of thing. But the experiences I gained have translated over into this business because I did a lot of writing and I was on interview panels and I also was able to mentor people. So some of those things I've learned, being organized, time management, those things I have, definitely took with me. Those skills I'll never lose, but what I actually did is totally different.
So tell us about your pivot. What exactly are you doing now? And I want to say, how are you? What is your purpose? What is it? And what is the purpose of it?
Sure. My purpose is to equip people to be able to interview with confidence and competence. Also, help them write that resume where they stand out from the other candidates. Even if they have questions about, is it right for me to move in my career? Should I look for a promotion or should I change industries? I can also give them clarity on that, career coaching. Maybe you're looking for that promotion, but you're not sure if you have the right skills yet to apply for that new job. Or if you're just wanting some job search tools, then I can give you that as well. So it's more of the HR factor, but I'm just not an HR manager by trade.
Okay. So in respect to what you are doing now, were you doing any type of interviews while you were with the Public Health Administration? Were you on any panels that were doing those type of things for you to gain in insight on this? Or how did you come across that this is going to be it?
Well, this has been my whole career, being on interview panels, being the interviewee. I mean, that's how I really came to be the interviewologist, as some of my friends call me, because I was my first customer. In college, I had that interview, right before you graduate, seniors, you think you're going to rule the world, invent something better than sliced bread. So I had an interview with a bank for an entry-level position. And a few days later, she called me to let me know I didn't get the job. But she also told me I was dressed professionally and I had problems answering some of those common interview questions. So I was devastated. I mean, my heart dropped. I felt like a failure. I felt rejected. I also felt anxiety and stress because I had a little girl at the time. My child was probably a toddler. And I also, had a husband at that time that was looking for me to help provide and support the family. So I made it my business. I went on a quest to learn how to answer those common interview questions to make sure my resume was in the proper format so it would stand out from the other applicants. So I really worked on me. And then just as time went on, I got better. And so family members started asking me to help them do their resume or prep them for interviews, coworkers, friends. So that's how it's come about. But I've been on those panels and I've seen the mistakes that people make. And they're little mistakes that can just knock you out that you don't even realize it's a mistake, where you would come in and say, shake someone's hand and you immediately sit down. That's a mistake because you're a guest in someone's house, per se. And so you have to let them invite you to have a seat. And so those are little things. The most common thing I've seen over my years of being on those panels is people not doing the thank you, email. Back in the day, it used to be the letter, but now thank you email. That is very crucial. People have no idea that a lot of times knocks you out of the running.
So let me ask you a question about that thank you letter. How do you do you do a thank you letter if you, because there are so many different so platforms available and a lot of interviewing is being done electronically now. So you're going online, you're searching Indeed and Chronicle.hi, all of these different entities. So when you are applying and you see a position and you are applying, is there any follow-up to that? or only if they've contacted you for an actual interview.
It's only if they've contacted you, because a lot of companies, pretty much everything is online now. Very rarely can you go into a business and put in an application. So everything's online. And if they're contacting you for further information, that's when the dialogue starts. So you may have to wait until a closing date, because normally they'll give you a closing date. And then after that, it can take anywhere from a week to even like 20 days before, or sometimes longer, especially with the federal government, before you can get a response. And if you don't get a response, then there's really nothing you can do, because a lot of times you're just applying on a website. It's not like you're sending your resume, your application directly to a person. So really, it's a sit and wait thing, unless you actually have been given a real, name and email to send your information to.
That's good. Now, see, I'm an HR person, and so I've sat on many of these panels. So the fact that you are doing, resumes and helping people with their interviews and stuff, that really speaks to me. When you are doing or you're working with different people on their resumes and sharing different perspective, does their culture ever create a dynamic for an organization that they might be in it, that they may be interested in? Because every person is not a best fit for every organization.
So
Or
are
does
you talking
that
about the,
matter?
okay, are you talking about the person, their culture, or the organization?
Well, it could be both because you got the person organization, you also have the organization person fit as well. So does it matter? Because I remember interviewing some students at the university and they would just want a job.
Right.
And they could care less about, am I a fit for them or are they a fit for me? So would that be something that you would actually talk to your people that you're working with to kind
Yes.
of help them on the forefront, then on that, then after they make a bad decision?
Of course, what I tell clients is when you're looking at that particular job, you need to look at the organization as well. You have to do your research. You need to research that organization. What are their values? Who are their customers? How do they make their money? Are they having some new projects that are coming down the pike in the next few years? Is their growth? Are they expanding or are they, shrinking? But the values, you want to make sure at least most of their values line up with yours. Say, for instance, an organization is big on volunteering, and that's something you're passionate about. So that may be an organization you would look into further, because that's something they value and you value as well. You can't look at it for the money. If you're in it just for the money, you're not going to be happy and you're not going to stay long, because if they have a value that is very, let's say, cutthroat, they don't, work together as a team, every man for himself, and you're used to working in a more collaborative or collegial environment, that's not going to be a good fit for you.
That's good. Now, can you share with us maybe one or two questions that are typically on across interviews? We know that there'll be some variance, but what are a few questions that everybody should be expected that they're going to answer it in that interview?
Tell me about yourself. And they do not want to know that you got three kids, two dogs, and you live in your mama basement. That's not what they want to know. What skills are you bringing to the table? You can say something like, I'm a dedicated professional that is good at writing reports. I'm good at collaborating with other team members to reach organizational goals. I have excellent written and communication skills, as well as the ability to think out the box. Those are things you want to, you're always highlighting your skills, and they're different skills. So what I use in tell me about yourself is not something I'm going to use in why should we hire you? Those are two, I'm using different skills and I'm still getting my point across. Why would I be the best candidate? Another question that is pretty common is the strengths and the weaknesses question. And people are usually like, you know, in there looking up at the sky, waiting for an answer, or they're like, you should already know five or six to your strengths off the bat. I'm detail oriented. I'm organized. I am great at developing and maintaining effective working relationships with diverse groups of people. I am great at writing. I'm great at analyzing data and coming to a conclusion. I'm good at making recommendations based on and analyzing data. But those are things you can just, you know, tell them. Now, when it comes to weaknesses, you want to be honest, but you definitely do not want a negative light. You can always take a negative and turn it into a positive. So, for example, I would say something like, well, one of my weaknesses was time management. But what I've done is I put reminders on my calendar because sometimes I can get so absorbed in a project that I'm passionate about that time just flies away. But I know I still have other projects that need my attention as well. So I use reminders on my calendar to put that aside and then work on other priorities. So see, it was a negative and now it's turned into a positive.
I think I really like that because I think back in the day, that was one of the things that they didn't give you a way to word it correctly. They were just like, well, you got to be able to tell them something that you're not good at. But like, who wants to
Exactly.
tell you
Yes, exactly. You don't want to tell them, but you have to put a positive spin because if I would have said like, well, I have bad time management, and I probably would just been sitting there like, I just blew that because they're thinking, oh gosh, this person's not organized. She gonna miss deadlines, but they're not realizing that with, you know, putting reminders, that's given me the ability to focus on multiple things. I can prioritize. If you bring me something in, Dr. Ness, like, hey, I need something done an hour. Okay, I can put aside everything else, focus on this, give it back to you, and then go back to my other projects. But saying that, you know, a few years ago, that would have just booted you out. They'd be like, can't have her. No. So you have to put a positive spin and make sure you word it where it is positive. You don't want to say, well, oh, I don't like working with people. You know, you're gonna have to
want
re
to work in my company.
yes, you know, you got to work, you know, well, sometimes I had problems working with others because being a manager, I sometimes just held on to projects because I wanted it done and wanted it right. What I've done now is look at my team members and see what skills they possess so that way I can delegate the appropriate work to the right person who has that skill set. So, see, you know, it's not so much you don't like working with people, but being a manager, you know, it's hard to give up responsibility sometimes. So, you know, you often end up doing the job yourself.
I like that. I think those are really, really great questions. But I'm a SWAT girl, so you know I fully can I can re relate to that. Can you now this will be a little, well, maybe I don't know when, maybe not fit. I was gonna say, can you think of an interview that you've had, but you really did you well, you still had to interview for different positions, did you?
Yes,
Okay.
mostly. What? Think of one that was bad?
No, I don't want to say bad. No, don't say
Okay.
bad. Think about a memorable, a memorable or rewarding experience you had in an interview.
One of my most memorable ones, I was living in Phoenix, and those of you who haven't lived out west, it's a little different vibe. And I remember going into an interview. It was working for a hospital in like an administrative position. I went into the interview. I was in a $200 suit. I was dressed and impressed. I had my little, you know, briefcase with me, my copies of my resume, reference letters. And I go in, and the lady who was interviewing me, she was in, I guess, what you would term leggings, an oversized shirt, and some sandals. And when I saw, I was like, oh, this ain't gonna go well. This is not gonna go well. And she told me, she said, you know what? You should be doing my job. You were dressed so nice. And I'm thinking, yeah, I probably am qualified. Of course, I didn't get that job because I came in because, I came from the East Coast. That's how you dress when you went to an interview. You were very professional. You wore that suit, and they were a lot more casual. And so that's probably my most memorable one with that lady, like in the leggings, oversized shirt, and the thong sandals. And I'm here in this $200 suit. So, yeah, that one definitely. After that, I really haven't had problems in terms of getting a job because, again, I practiced from the time, I was a senior getting out of college until I finished grad school, like 3 years later. I got to be really good at answering those questions because I did my research. I would go into the library and couldn't check the books out back then. They were a reference book, but go into the library and make copies of pages of books, that I thought would help me in terms of interviewing, resume writing, in that good format. So for me, it hasn't been a problem. I've just seen the other side being on the interview panel and some of the mistakes people have made.
So from your experience being on the other side and watching people make experience, creating issues for themselves in that interview process, have you seen or can you tell us when it comes to the soft skills that people need to have in the work environment, what type of things were you seeing? Did people seem like they could really because for instance, yourself, when you talked about that first interview that you went to, you weren't communicative enough,
Right.
which would be how do you engage, which is a part of that soft skills. How are we able to connect with one another? How do you see that, and how was that flow when you were in the process, and how are you sharing that with people that you're working with?
Within the process, I know one thing that, I did well. I had a smile on my face. I gave a nice firm handshake. I looked that person in the eye and I waited until I was invited to have a seat. My problems came not being prepared for those questions. And people have to realize that courtesy counts, saying thank you, please. I'm from the South, the yes, sir, yes, ma'am, but depending on where you live, no, they don't want to be called that. And believe me, if you start out saying that, and I would say, oh no, call me Nicolette, and you kept calling me ma'am, then I would make a note. I would be like, oh, can't follow directions. So you want to address people as they ask you to address them. If it's last names, then you would, address them by the last name. So that's something I've seen in terms of the etiquette, how to sit. That one gets comments on, for example, you go in there and sometimes people sit like, they're at home comfortable, they got the little lean on or they're slouched. And it's like, no, you got to sit up. You have to sit, tall. You have to, show a presence. That's something I've seen nowadays with technology. Another thing I've seen, people bring in these devices. Don't bring in that phone. If you are, it better be totally off. Those smartwatches, you need to make sure they're off because that is very distracting. I had a client tell me he was on a panel and they had someone interview and said the guy's phone rang and he did them like this and talked on the phone and talked on the phone. And then when he finished, he said they told them, this interview is concluded. I was like, wow. So y'all don't take in those electronic devices. And I know gentlemen, you have the keys. I normally walk around jangling, jangling, don't have, all those keys in your pocket because when you're walking, it's making that noise. Or if you move, it's distracting. Just take your car key in there with you. So those are some of the things I've noticed, the etiquette part, little things that mess you up.
This is good. Y'all, this is good. I know some of y'all are going to be trying to get some interviews soon. And listen, if your resume isn't up to par, call this lady. I said her name wrong, y'all, because I get excited. Nicolette, not Nicolette. But anyway, She has such a she has like a stage presence name, you know, Nicolette Hemingway, you know, the Hemingway. But love the name, love the name. But if you need your resume updated, this is your go-to. This is the person to reach out to. How can they connect with you?
Yes, they can connect with me on IG. I'm on there as NikeH Speaks LLC, the name of my company. They can also email me, NikeHSpeaks.com, spelled like Nike, the letter H for my last name, Hemingway, and then the word speaks.com. Also, they can email me, info at NikeHSpeaks.com. But I'm on LinkedIn, just my whole name, Nicolette Hemingway. Also, you can find me on Facebook. That's an IG. It's the same name as my business, NikeH Speaks LLC.
Now, we're not finished, y'all. I just wanted to make sure we got that in there to go along with the interview information and the resume. Now, if you missed all of that and you get to the end and you say, oh, what was it? And you don't want to just message me and I'll make sure you get the information, okay? I will do that for you. Now, let us take a little shift here because this is Dr. Annette Publishing Pusher, all right? And
Okay.
every week we're talking to some author, most of the time, a business professional, entrepreneur, kingdompreneur, and of course, Nicolette is as well. But I want you to, I believe, now let me get it right, because it's you got a two parts to your title. So I'm gonna say the part I know, and then you're gonna tell us the whole title. So
Okay.
the part that I remember is a wake up call with God, but I know there's something more that goes with it.
Right. The first part is Little Black Girl from the Beach, a wake up call from God.
Little Black Girl from the Beach. Now, is
Beach.
this a book for Black girls, or just happens to be that a little Black girl that's a big girl now wrote the book?
Pretty much that's it. The latter little black girl turned into a big black girl and she wrote the book. And I like to say it's truth wrapped in fiction. It's pretty much my life, but some things have been fictionalized because I didn't want my folks to sue me. You know, folks assume, oh, that's me. No, it's not. It's the character. So that's pretty much chronicling. Denise or Niecy is the main character. So it pretty much chronicled her life from being a child up until she had a wake up call from God. She had an encounter with God in a hotel room and she gave her life to Christ. So it just talks about, you know, a childhood trauma, a childhood, what do you call it? Not a deficit, but a childhood like injury and childhood trauma. And of course, you know how you get older dealing with friends and peer pressure, and then being, you know, a young adult in college, you know, having a child, being married, and a career. And how those issues that she dealt with, how it really led her on a downward spiral with using drugs. And so she was, you know, a functioning drug addict. That's the best way I can put it. And so she had that encounter with God where she gave her life to Christ. So it's really book one of three books. I'm working on part two now. And so that's how God laid it out to me. You know, talk about up to this point, and then this is the next one, and this is the next one. So that's pretty much it. And people can relate. Doesn't matter what race you are, because some of the things in that book are relatable. Childhood trauma, you know, a childhood handicap. That was what I wanted to say. A childhood handicap, you know, friends, peer pressure. Those are things anybody can relate to. So it's not just for, you know, black women, it's for anyone.
Okay, so the front of your book has a little girl that's actually on the beach. Now,
Yes.
was the beach like a go-to place for you?
Really, I use it as two things. One is, you know, I grew up in Myrtle Beach, and so we went to the beach like every other week, you know, in the summer growing up. And then the other part was the beach I looked at as going and getting into the water, being cleansed, being healed. So it's two parts to that.
Okay. I like that. Now, you talk about, and we can all attest to life issues and traumas, and that, well, one of the things that we, I'm reminding us of, if you, Ian, you may not even know this, some of you, but that the first 5 to 6 years of a child's life are the most impressionable years. And therefore, the majority, this is how much our brains can hold, the majority of what we need to know, we gain it in those first years. They say like about 80%. Isn't that amazing in itself to think that
yes.
from there, from birth to six, and then you're still going to live to be 80 or 90 years old, and you're only starting to fill in the other 20%, and it's never totally full. That's just unimaginable. But that's how God in his creation, okay?
Yes.
So when we think about that, so much can happen to us when we are young. Was any of your issues something happening to you as a child and you carried it over into your adulthood and it impacted different relationships and how you engage with people?
Definitely, of course, the childhood trauma and then the childhood handicap that really affected me, especially the handicap. It made me shy. And then the trauma as well. So I may be nice and outgoing, but really I'm an introvert. I'd rather be by myself with a book, you know, watching an old school movie. So that has been really affected by what happened to me as a child. And then growing up, just some of the environments that I was in, you wanted to fit in, you know, with your peers. And for me, looking back and having therapy, I realized that what I was doing was really based on trying to mask the pain, hide the pain. So that was what I was doing. I was hiding the pain with marijuana. You know, I'm old school. I ain't smoked in quite some time. So back in my day, it was reefer. My daughter be like, "Ma, it's weed. It's weed." I'm like, "Y'all call it weed. I call it reefer. Your grandparents call it pot. It's the same thing. It's from the earth." And so that's what I use. I use, you know, marijuana as, you know, the cover up for the pain. And, you know, I would just smoke. That was the way I dealt with it. Some of it, you know, I suppressed, but that was my coping mechanism. And, you know, going through therapy, that really revealed that's what I was using to mask that pain, because I also grew up in the era, and Dr. Annette, you probably can attest to this as well. You know, we didn't tell about things, you know, like what went on in the house, you know, stays in the house. We were brought up like, you better not, once you hit that door, you better not discuss family business, nothing like that. And so that was a part of my upbringing as well. There were just some subjects you just didn't talk about. They were taboo. So, you know, that also where, you know something that happened, but you can't share it with anybody. And so that also chips away at your self-esteem, your self-worth, your self-value.
That's good. That's good. Well, listen, everybody, give us the title of the book again.
It's A Little Black Girl from the Beach, A Wake-Up Call by God. Now, if you look under my name, Nicolette Hemingway, you're not going to find it. If you put my first initial N and then Hemingway, it'll pop up. But like Dr. Annette said, it's A Little Black Girl at the Beach. You can't miss the cover of it.
But they can also get this book where
on Amazon.
Okay, so you're selling it directly through Amazon?
Yes, Amazon. Or if you want an autographed copy, then you can reach out to me and you can get it from me as well.
I love to discuss books. So, you know, you can also get a copy of this book for you and a group of your people. And
yes,
you can have a discussion chapter by chapter, which will take several weeks. And I love discussions, not study, discussion. Everybody read the part and then let's talk about what you got from it, how it impacted you, and how it can help you or someone else that you know. You know, the fact that she talked about trauma, most everybody's had some type of trauma. And as the old folks say, if you haven't, just keep living.
Yes.
Not that we're trying to put it on you, but
Right.
this is just the reality of life that bad things even happen to good people. And this is a reality. But in the process, to be able to get the tools that we need to help us so that we can be whole and be able to move forward. N Nicolette, Nicolette, I like the title of your book. I really do. Especially the part, A Wake Up Call by God. Who else to give us that wake up call?
Right. I mean, it truly was God, because I was really in a downward spiral. What was going on the outside, you probably would have thought my life was perfect, this job, the house, the car. But on the inside, I was slowly, killing myself. And if God wouldn't have woken me up in that hotel room all these years ago, I probably literally would have been dead. Because something would have happened where it would have just escalated and went out of control. I mean, it may have would have gotten to the point where, oh, instead of waiting until I got home to smoke, I decided, oh, let me go out in my car, during lunch, and of course, y'all, the reefer smell comes with you. I don't care how much perfume or whatever, you can't spray that all. So, those are the things I'm thankful to God for, for letting me have that encounter with him, because I know really my end result would have been death, and not just so much a physical death, but a spiritual death as well. So I'm grateful that he intervened when he did, because again, I thought everything was going great, but I was still masking the pain by, smoking reefer. So he came right on time. God is always on time.
Thank God for deliverance.
Yes.
Thank God for deliverance. Well, Nicolette, I want to thank you for taking your time today to come in and share with us. This has been very enlightening, the content that you shared about interviewing and resumes and about your book. I hope much success for you in both of these endeavors, with the book and with the new business
Thank
that you
you.
started 3 or so years ago. And remember, everyone, you're listening in. If you need help with your resume, if you need help with interview questions, you want to get comfortable with that process, Nicolette Hemingway is the person for you to reach out to. Tell them again, Nicolette, how they can reach out to you.
Yes, thank you again, Dr. Annette West, for having me on your show. This has been very great. Love the back and forth, the energy that you bring. If you want to get in touch with me, you can go to my website, nikehspeaks.com. Again, that's spelled like Nike, the letter H for Hemingway Speaks, SPEAKS.com. You can find me on LinkedIn by my first and last name, Nicolette Hemingway. Also on IG and Facebook with Nike H Speaks, LLC. That's how you can reach out to me.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Make sure you share this with someone else. I'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Dr. Vanessa Chad Podcast, brought to you by John A. Publishing. Be sure to stay tuned in for future conversations and engagements. Check out the website, jotnatepublishing.org, and subscribe to this show on your preferred podcast app. Shout out to 95 for the production. Be blessed and be a blessing. Peace.